Humanitarian Engineering Podcast.
Welcome to the 11th episode of the Humanitarian Engineering Podcast. My name is Nina and I'm here with my co-host Peter.
Welcome.
And our guest for today is Arash. Welcome, Arash. Can you maybe start with telling us something about yourself?
Sure. My name is Arash Gargar. I am 42 years old. I live in the Netherlands for more than 25 years by now, and I was born in Afghanistan. So I've been raised in Afghanistan, and I came to the Netherlands as a refugee. And the last 10, 11 years, I've been working in the development sector. I did projects in countries like Afghanistan, Palestine, Nigeria, but also Jordan and Lebanon.
Well, thank you. I think maybe you can still talk about your educational background and also, what kind of practical experience you came across in your work.
Sure. My education background, I did a bachelor in public administration at the Erasmus University. And after my bachelor, I traveled to Australia for 6 months, where I did an exchange program in international politics and philosophy. And finally, I did a master in public administration at the University of Maastricht.
Okay, great. I think then we can maybe move on to the second part of the podcast.
So welcome again, Arash. You work a lot in the field of capacity building. And if I'm not wrong, you really have quite a lot of expertise on training of trainers, often in the Middle East. Can you tell us a little bit more and also to our viewers about one of the projects you've been involved in, or just general the projects that you are involved in?
Mm-hmm. Well, most of the projects that we did is in the field of capacity building, and the topics are quite different. So what we do is we define the capacity need of each organization. So the projects that we do is always tailor-made. So we do it by understanding the capacity need of the organization, and based on that we design our trainings and provide the trainings. So the topics are totally different. So where we have as an organization expertise, we provide the training by ourselves. But we do also work with a lot of other organizations. So one of the example is University of Twente or University of Wageningen. So we did, for example, with the University of Wageningen, a project in the field of food security, at the field of water management. But me as a consultant and trainer, I provide mostly trainings in the field of project management, stakeholder management, but also on personal development and coaching.
Well, very interesting, Arash. I think what I find unique is that in these projects you target vulnerable communities, such as refugees. Can you perhaps tell the readers more about your experience working with these communities and with organizations that also work with them, and especially or in particular challenges that you normally come across when implementing or working with such communities?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very good question, Peter. Thanks for that. What makes it for us challenging is that we do not directly can work with the refugees, because if you go to Jordan, for example, there is a huge refugee camp where a lot of refugees are living, and these refugees are receiving trainings, education, mental health from the local NGOs. So what we mainly do is we work with the local NGOs to empower their capacity so they can support the refugees. So this is challenge because we are depending so much on the local NGOs, but we try to analyze very well the needs of the refugees and based on that provide our trainings. So that's actually...
I think that's also a very interesting point. And then also what we find curious is that it seems like the main focus of your work is not so much on technology-related subjects. Yet in your work, did you come, for instance, across projects whereby this technology aspect is needed as an enabling factor, and how important was it? What role did it play in terms of the work you do as a consultant for capacity building for vulnerable communities in this case?
I think, although you're right that the work that we do as a trainer, as a consultant, is not directly related to technology, but we had some projects, for example, in Afghanistan where we used tablets, very simple, to provide project management to an organization in Afghanistan, the Chamber of Commerce. At the same time, when I was the last time in Jordan, I visited the refugee center, and where we saw actually a very big place, a kind of a bus, you know, a big bus, which was used as a mental health center for the refugees. So I think as a consultant, we do not directly work with that, but understanding the needs of the technology is something that we also take and need assessment that we do to see how we can integrate technology to make sure that we empower people. We cannot do it ourselves because it's not our expertise, but we work with our other organizations like University of Wageningen, as I mentioned. So another example that I can give, in Palestine, we had a project in the field of water management. So we actually helped a lot of farmers to conduct small pilots to see how they can use water more efficiently. So these are some examples that we do in the fields where we combine actually learning with technology.
So maybe just before we conclude, what in your view do you see as the biggest challenge when working with working on technology-related subjects together with vulnerable communities, apart from what you already mentioned in your previous statement?
Well, I think that the mistake that most of the organizations do is they are implementing some technology in the context of Jordan, Afghanistan, which country it might be. I think before you implement the technology, it's very important to understand the real needs of the community, of vulnerable community, and to see when you are going to implement the technology, what you need more than only the technology, because only the technology is not a solution. So you have to take it very broadly to understand the context, understand their culture, understand their behavior, but also the political context. When you see it from the holistic approach, then you can use the technology to be more effective and efficient, and also to it enable you to empower people.
So from your experience, what can be improved generally in the development sector?
Well, good question, Peter. Thanks for that. I think the most important, based on my own experience, is that most of the organizations, we are focusing very much on the skills development. So we want to improve the skills of people. But for really behavioral change, you have to change on a different level, which is actually more the mindset. It does not mean that we have to change mindset of people because it's not okay, but within the cultural context that they have, within the environment that they are living, when we focus more on changing beliefs, changing identity, make sure that they will be more open, and make sure that we will actually accelerate the behavioral change. So because with the skills development, it's good, but it will change only what you can do better. But if you really want to have flourish societies, then we have to focus actually more on the beliefs of people, their identity, and the way they want to be. So I think that's more important, that we have to shift from skills development more to changing beliefs.
Well, very interesting. What do you think, Nina?
I think it's definitely something which I haven't heard necessarily before, but I agree, actually. It has to go a bit deeper, because in the end, it's it's not enough if we just teach some skills, but we really need to change something in the way we think. So I think it's actually a very insightful addition.
Indeed, I couldn't agree more. And I think also, Harash, if you correct me, it also fits very well in this holistic approach. When
I do think, because let's give an example. For example, if you use technology and skills development, but if I feel very insecure and the way I'm doing things, because I believe I cannot do it, if I do not change this, I will not be able to use the technology in a proper way. But if I believe more in myself, I will be able to use the technology more in an effective way, because I believe in myself, I know I can do it. So this is something that we have to focus as well, also in humanitarian engineering, where we not only use the skills development, but also more the beliefs and the self-confidence of people.
Okay, Arash, then maybe a follow-up question for that. How can we do that then? How can we change the beliefs? Because I think that's almost the hardest thing to do, to change someone's beliefs.
Well, I think for this, we have also trainings, coaching. For example, the work that I have done is I provide trainings on NLP, the neuro-linguistic programming, which really focus on the identity and belief of people. We provided a few organizations the training on NLP, where they learn how to coach yourself. And with this, you coach other people, also especially with the refugees, because when we know how to be emotionally stable, then we can be also more more active in the society. So we do not isolate ourselves, but we will be more open to the world. So I think that there are a lot of trainings, coaching that we can use to make sure that we make sure that people be more themselves and not bounded by the traditions, by the boundaries that they have.
And maybe also to follow up, is this something that you also encountered in the field when offering training for refugees, for instance, or developing tailor-made training for them?
Yes, most of the time, because when we provide a training, we take it more also from the holistic approach. So when we want to achieve behavioral change, then we take also into account the coaching, more the soft skills that you need to make sure that this that they use it also not in their work, but also in their professional and personal life.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you a lot. It was very insightful, and I think definitely something to consider also for our humanitarian engineering program.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot, Arash. I think we can, it's I think indeed very interesting insights, because I think we have a feeling also integrating technology-related subjects sometimes for vulnerable communities is not always straightforward. And I think your insights are really quite important. So thanks a lot. I think Nina could move to the next part.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. And thank you, Arash, for this insightful information. Well, the last part, or almost last part of our podcast, are four fast questions, which you can answer more or less in one or two sentences, so quite short. And they focus on humanitarian engineering. So maybe to recap, what humanitarian engineering is about, is basically about co-developing solutions, engineering solutions for underserved communities, so communities that lack access to fundamental resources, but also that don't have necessarily the right opportunities, so that they are kind of having a disadvantage in some way. The first question that we have is, why do you think that humanitarian engineering is relevant?
Well, I think it's relevant because, as you just mentioned, it's a combination of different aspects. So it's not only the technology, but it's also an holistic approach where you empower people. So I think it's something new that we do not know actually in the development sector, where you see the engineering, humanitarian engineering from different perspectives, not only technology, but also the social aspect, economical aspect, and political aspect. And this makes it more complete. This makes it also more effective, I think.
Well, thank you. And our second question is, what is the most urgent topic to be addressed by humanitarian engineering?
Well, I cannot pinpoint one specific topic. It depends on the context. It depends on the challenges of a society. But I do believe, the way I understood the humanitarian engineering, that you can apply it to all kind of challenges that you have in the society, by understanding the society, but also to see what kind of technology could be used to solve the problems. So one specific topic, I don't know, maybe digitalization, maybe creating more jobs for the society, especially because when you see some countries in Middle East, 60-70% of the people are under age of 27. So there is a lot of jobs needed, so we can use technology to make sure that people have more jobs. But it's not related to one topic. I think it could be applicable to more topics.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It's always very context dependent. That's definitely true. Coming to our third question, how can humanitarian engineering make the most impact?
Very good question. I think it will make most impact if you really understand the context, if you really be more empathic to understand the needs of the people. For me, as a development worker, the best lessons that I have is to really understand the real needs, because the real needs and the saying that you have to be there, you have to talk with people. And most of the time what NGOs and developing organizations are doing is just by reading some research, and we think that we understand the needs. But if you really want to understand the needs, you have to place yourself in the shoes of the vulnerable community. You have to talk with them. You have to feel how they feel. Then you can be more effective in the work that you're doing.
Very relevant, that's true, like for all our humanitarian engineering students out there. So you have to go to the field, I think. all right, the last question that we have in this round is, well, pick one aspect that makes humanitarian engineering different from other from other engineering disciplines.
Well, I think I already mentioned this, that the holistic approach is really what I like. Seeing to a problem from different perspectives, using multidisciplinary to solve problems. And this is something that's really, really needed in the development sector. So I think that's really the added value of humanitarian engineering.
Thank you a lot, Arash, for your answers. I think we are also done now with this part of the podcast, and we are moving to the last part.
Thanks, Nina, and also thanks, Arash, for the insights you've been able to provide to our listeners so far. So we're coming towards the end of the podcast. So just to give a summary, we've been hosting Arash Karga, who's a consultant with quite a lot of experience working with vulnerable communities in different areas, and especially capacity building. So focusing on entrepreneurship, but also looking at how they could develop together with these communities tailor-made training that can solve a variety of challenges that they face. So as summary, Arash has given very good insights on the need for taking a holistic approach, also looking into the multidisciplinary aspects solving problems, but also a keen understanding of the community. So looking at the social dynamics and also the cultural dynamics that influences these communities. So with that, we want to thank you so much, Arash, for finding time to join us for this podcast, and we look forward to the next episode.